I will be talking again about monitoring emerging resistance in Neisseria gonorrhea in the U.S. And just as a brief overview, first we'll be discussing about the background, then the antimicrobial susceptibility trends that we see in GIST, which stands for the Gonococcal Isolate Surveillance Project, and then the gonorrhea treatment among only GIST participants, limitations, challenges, conclusions, and recommendations. Well, first question that always comes to mind is really, why are you monitoring antimicrobial resistance in gonorrhea? And you could first see from Lori's talk was that for gonorrhea, there's really a high burden of disease. And a key to reducing this burden is by effective prevention and control programs using prompt detection and effective treatment. However, effective treatment is definitely complicated by Neisseria gonorrhea's ability to develop resistance to effective antimicrobials. We see this in the history of antimicrobial-resistant gonorrhea in the U.S. Beginning in the 1930s when sulfonamides were used for treatment, and then in the 1940s there was increase to sulfonamides, so penicillin was then recommended. In the 1970s, resistance to penicillin was detected, and they were also asked to increase the penicillin dose to help with that increase. And then in the 1980s, resistance to penicillin and tetracycline continued to increase, and thus ceftriaxone was recommended. And that was also the time that GIST was also started. And then in 1993, fluoroquinolones were also added to the recommendation. And when I say fluoroquinolones, examples of those are ciprofloxacin, ofloxacin, and levofloxacin. And sometimes I'll also be using, instead of saying fluoroquinolones, quinolones will also be used to shorten that. And then in the early 1990s, fluoroquinolone-resistant Neisseria gonorrhea, or QRNG, was sporadically detected in the U.S., mainly in Hawaii. And at the same time, overseas, there was definitely an increased prevalence of QRNG rising. And from that, in 2000, looking at GIST data, fluoroquinolones were no longer recommended in Hawaii, Pacific Islands, and those who acquired infection in these areas, and also in Asia. And then in 2002, fluoroquinolones were no longer recommended in California. And in 2004, there was another recommendation not to recommend fluoroquinolones among MSM, or men who have sex with men. And then the most recent is 2007, where fluoroquinolones were then no longer recommended for treatment in all persons in the U.S. and for associated conditions. And I'll go through some of that data with you throughout this presentation so you can see how we came to that. Again, GIST was established in 1986 and serves as the National Sentinel Surveillance System to monitor trends in antimicrobial susceptibilities in Neisseria gonorrhea and to establish a rationale and basis for the selection of antimicrobial treatment for gonococcal infection. This is a collaborative effort between many people that are in this room right now, CDC, our 25 to 30 publicly funded STD clinics, which are also called GIST Sentinel sites, and their respective local and state public health authorities, and currently five regional labs. The Sentinel sites submit the first 25 male urethral gonococcal isolates to their designated regional laboratory and also submit the corresponding patient's clinical and demographic data. The five regional labs perform all the antimicrobial susceptibility testing for all the isolates that's been submitted using the agar dilution method. And the antibiotics that are currently tested are penicillin, tetracycline, spectinomycin, ceftriaxone, ciprofloxacin, azithromycin, and cefixime. However, due to unavailability of cefixime, since 2001, we had discontinued that in 2007. The location, this is a map showing just the location of our, in 2007, of our 30 sites. We recently were able to add Richmond, Virginia, and also Kansas City came back as a site. They had started in 1991 to 2001, and discontinued, but again has now come back in 2007. The location of our regional labs are in Birmingham, Atlanta, Denver, Seattle, and Cleveland. This is just some characteristics, overall characteristics of GIST participants for 2006. And again, as all my other colleagues, I'm presenting some preliminary 2007 data from January to June. As you can see, the median age tends to be around 27 years old, with a wide range. And for the majority of race is reported blacks, whites, and then Asian, Pacific Islander, and those who report other in the race category or more than one race. And the majority of our males also report being heterosexual, although within the MSM, we've been seeing an increase in percentage of MSMs throughout the years. And then in terms of those who, in 2006, about 8% of our GIST participants reported being HIV positive at that time of visit. And as you can see, there's been a slight increase in 2007 to 9.5. Just of note, the proportion, and this has been stable through the years, that those who report being positive, about 27% are MSM and about 1 to 2% are heterosexual. This is just a figure of reported sexual orientation by race and ethnicity in GIST in 2006. And as you can see, for the majority of blacks, they report being heterosexual, whereas for whites and Asian and a little bit of Hispanic are the majority of reporting MSM. Now I'm going to go through some of our antimicrobial susceptibility testing trends. However, I can't do that without showing you a little bit of just the criteria that we use in GIST. And these are criteria that have also been recommended by the Clinical and Laboratory Standards Institute, which is formerly known as the NCCLS. And of note, though, they're currently in the criteria, there's no criteria for resistance to ceftriaxone, cefixime, and azithromycin, and for susceptibility to azithromycin. These just haven't been established. This is a figure to show the percent of isolates from GIST with intermediate resistance and or resistance to QRNG from 1990 to 2007. The intermediate is in the gray bar, and the in fuchsia is the resistance. And as you can see, that it's obviously been a dramatic increase throughout the years. And in 2000, this is when we made recommendations to discontinue fluoroquinolone in Hawaii and the Pacific Islands. And then in 2002 is where we made recommendations. And when I say make recommendations, these, and I'll show you later on, these were based on the data in the previous years, but this is when the MMWR came out. But in 2002 was California, and then again 2004 was when we had for MSM, and 2007 was for all persons, which will be seen more clear in this figure. And where this is the percent of GIST isolates with QRNG by sexual orientation, and this excludes the California and Hawaii sites, which already at that time it was not recommended. And so in the orange bars is the MSM, and in the yellow bars are the heterosexual. And again, in 2004, when we put out the MMWR to discontinue fluoroquinolone use in MSM, this was based on 2002 data and also preliminary 2003, where our cutoff is generally a prevalence greater than 5%. And then 2007, for the heterosexual, this was based on data from 2005 and preliminary data from 2006. This is the distribution of MIC to ciprofloxacin 2003-2007. For those who aren't familiar with MIC, that means the mean inhibitory concentration, which is the smallest amount of antibiotic used to inhibit growth when you do this in vitro testing in the laboratory. And and this is shown on the y-axis. So these are the different amounts of plates. For ciprofloxacin, the criteria for resistance is at one MIC, and as you can see from one MIC on, this is all the resistance MICs, and from 0.125 to 0.5 is intermediate resistance. Just of note, I know it looks a bit odd in this in this figure, but in 2007, we also, aside from discontinuing Cefixime, after our GIST PI meeting, it was decided that we would drop some of our lower concentration, which is still all within the susceptible range, to 0.008. That's why you see a sort of a strange blip here. When we look further at the resistance MICs for Flexin, you can see definitely there's been an obvious increase throughout the years, and the green being the 2007. This is the distribution of MIC ceftriaxone from 2003 to 2007. And the criteria from CLSI is anything that is greater than 0.25 on would then be most likely decreased susceptibility. And as you can see, there hasn't been any increases. And so far, and just since the beginning, there's only been four isolates that reported, and these were all in the 1990s. In terms of the distribution of MICs to azithromycin, one thing to point out is that, again, there is no established criteria, but for GIST, though, we have arbitrarily said about 1.0 MIC is where that you would see decreased susceptibility. However, in 2005, due to a media change, you can see that there is an obvious shift, good observational shift in the distribution, and so we increased our MICs to 2. And as you can see, there's been a slight increase. And this is the trend for some other antibiotics. For penicillin and tetracycline or both, it's still been very high and greater than 20%. And for spectinomycin, so far currently there's all of our isolates have been susceptible in 2006 and 2007. For Cefixime, in the history since, again, 1986, there's been about 47 isolates, and we just added our 48th isolate in 2006 that had some decreased susceptibility. And for ceftriaxone, again, there has been none seen with decreased susceptible in 2006 and 2007. And again, in azithromycin, using the MIC of 2, we see that's increased from 0.2 to 0.6 right now. And these are some of the gonorrhea treatment used among GIST participants. One caveat I do want to say is that obviously this isn't representative of the U.S., but I thought it was very interesting to look at. And just to remind everyone, this was the MMWR that was in 2006, based on the data in the previous years, where ceftriaxone 125 milligram was recommended, Cefixime 400 milligram was recommended, and so were the fluoroquinolones. And in gray, you'll see this was, even though it was recommended, it was not available, and so that's why it's gray. So it really left in 2006 for clinicians to just use either ceftriaxone or ciprofloxacin and the other quinolones. And then due to the data that you saw in the previous slides in 2007, this was updated, and so no more quinolones were used. And now we were really left with ceftriaxone, which, as John has so eloquently pointed out today, that really we are left with one class of antibiotics now for the treatment of gonococcal infections. And as you can see, this is the gonorrhea treatment among GIST participants for cephalosporins. And in the green bar, this is Cefixime, which definitely decreased because it wasn't available. And then ceftriaxone 125 milligram is in the yellow line, and that is definitely increased with ceftriaxone, the 250 milligram in the red. And then cefpodoxime 200 milligram and 400 milligram. You can see that it's been slightly increasing the 400 milligram and slightly decreased in the 200 milligram. And thankfully, we do see the fluoroquinolone use has dramatically decreased. And although we don't recommend azithromycin use, which is a macrolide, we did want to see who was using it. And we do see that this azithromycin 2 gram has been increasing. And spectinomycin, which was available previously, has decreased due to the inavailability of that class. Now, when we talk about GIST, there is some limitations. Again, it's not representative of the total population of those with gonococcal infection. It only represents about approximately 3% of all men with this infection. And in GIST, we don't get any isolates from women, and we also don't get any isolates from the non-public sector. And as you heard from our colleagues, that we're just seeing a lot more data that most of these cases are coming from the private sector. And also, we have very limited sampling among the military population. Currently, we just have Tripler Army Medical out in Hawaii that submits isolates, but those have been less than 10 isolates per year. And one of the other limitations of GIST, although it's also a strength, is that GIST is a sentinel site and designed to be a sentinel site. But because of that, it's also very difficult to define local prevalence of antimicrobial-resistant gonorrhea. Because of that, it's really a challenge in the local areas. And again, just to bring up that point, is that there's really decreased culture testing among the public health laboratories, which Lori had brought up, the two surveys, which I'll also be showing later, as gnats just are rapidly replacing culture. And so there's really no organism to perform susceptibility testing. And because of that, there's fewer public health laboratories that are also performing this type of testing. And in addition, PSE testing is performed by mostly the private sector or non-public laboratories. And just to bring a little bit more detail and keep driving the point of this, again, as Lori has brought up, that there was a study in 2000 and 2004 by Linda Dicker and Debbie Mosier that just showed that in 2000, although there was about 79% of labs that perform GC culture, the total number of tests was 3.1 million. And out of those, the percent was 11% for the gonorrhea gnat testing versus culture, which was about 18%. Now, when they redid the study in 2004, you can see that the percent of labs that performed culture still was pretty stable, but it definitely, the gnat testing dropped, increased from 11 to 61%, and then with culture went from 18 and decreased to 8%. And we also see this in the California study that Sarah had brought up as well. California does an annual survey also looking at the volume and the type of testing, and this is a paper that came out in 2007 in STDs, and this looking at 1996 to 2003, and the range of labs that had performed testing throughout those years was about 380 to 700, and the proportion in 1993 was about 70% and dropped down to 59% in 2003. The total number of tests that were performed is 2 to 3 million, and then the percent of tests that were the gnat testing is went from 0.6 in 1996 to 59% in 2003, and then for culture it was 42% in 1996 down to 10% in 2003. And Sarah was able to provide us some more data just looking at the public health labs. And when you so from the number of labs here, there was about 39 to 49 labs altogether from 1996 to 2003, and again the proportion dropped from 74 to 52, and the total number of tests was about 270,000 to 330,000, and the percent that were gnats increased again from 2% to 85%, and the culture, again, as we saw from all the other surveys, was 86%, now down to 8%. One thing that I also wanted to bring that this survey also brought about was that in these labs above, these were also included private labs. And as you can see, the public labs were only about 10%. So that's how, that's another evidence to show that a lot of these STD lab testing are really being reported in the private sector, which we don't have a lot of data for. So in conclusion, just provides a national picture and provides crucial data to direct national treatment guidelines. QRNG is endemic throughout the U.S. and continues to increase and therefore not recommended for treatment. Currently, there's no ceftriaxone isolates with decreased susceptibility detected, and this is still the current recommended drug for treatment. Azithromycin, MIC, seems to be trending up slowly and therefore currently still not recommended for not a recommended treatment. And with continued decrease for GC culture testing and antimicrobial susceptibility testing, this poses real threat to monitoring newly emerging resistance in the U.S. Some CDC recommendations is that we really strongly recommend all state and local health departments to maintain or develop capacity to perform culture, and also encourage laboratories to maintain capacity to perform the antimicrobial susceptibility testing or form partnerships with experienced lab that can form this. And also really critical too is that we ask that clinicians report to CDC and also the state and local health departments any cephalosporin resistant isolate or case of clinical treatment failure after being treated with cephalosporins through their state, local and state public health authorities. In summary, close and continuous monitoring for antimicrobial resistance in Neisseria gonorrhea really remains critical. And we need to all remain vigilant for cephalosporin resistance, as it is the only class of antibiotics that's currently available. But lastly, I know we all painted somewhat of a grim picture, and there are definite challenges, but one thing that's just recently popped up is that Suffixine 400 milligrams that is going to be manufactured by Lupin Pharmaceuticals should actually, is now making a comeback and should be available in 2008. And about mid-March, so outside there's actually packaged inserts already for Suffixine in the booth right next door, and then right outside that you can pick up. And also, we are really working hard with the FDA and Pfizer to make spectinomycin available, just so there can be another class of antibiotics that you can use, especially for those patients who are allergic to cephalosporins and penicillin. So, which is happy news. This really couldn't be all possible with the people in Atlanta, and also our PIs and regional laboratories, but also all of our, most importantly, our Sentinel sites and their respective local and state public health authorities. And this is for any additional information, you can look at our website. So is there any questions? Well, IM is just much more easier for, especially in different types of settings like STD clinics where you really can't infuse ceftriaxone, although it's used for disseminated gonococcal infections in that treatment. So it does come in IV form, but it's not recommended for most of the general settings. And this was for just uncomplicated GC. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of, I believe that the distribution is really the same. It's just really the access to an IV is just really not, for most settings, not available.
The other is that there is, for the sample test, that's 255. And there are a number of clinicians who follow that recommendation and do it harder. And why is there a difference in their recommendation?
Some of the difference stems from also how it's being packaged in terms of the 250 milligram vials is generally what it comes to. And so most people, if they they don't want to use it as a multi-vial, so they would just use all of the 250, thinking, well, ceftriaxone is definitely okay to use, so just give all the 250 milligram. The reason why we specifically at CDC recommend the 125 milligram is just to give us a little leeway in case we do see some resistance and you need to go up to the higher dose. You want to be able to have some of that room to do so, but if everyone's giving 250 milligram, then you wouldn't be able to do that, and you'd have to increase it even more, where right now most vials only come in the 250 milligram. Right. Right. Okay. Yes, thank you for your comment, and I'll be able to bring it up to Kim Murkowski, who actually does the treatment guidelines, to bring that up as a point. Thank you. Currently, I don't think, in terms of the quinolone intermediate resistance to...
Just looking at general susceptibility, that in the UK, in graft, in 2004, they saw that 3 solution increase with their quinolone resistance, ceftriaxone susceptibility versus the ones who are quinolone susceptible. I just wondered if you've been able to see that.
Right now, we actually haven't looked at that, but that's something that we'll probably discuss, look at. But right now, especially since fluoroquinolones aren't being used, that wasn't something that I think we... But, yeah. Are there any other questions?